watch, which, as you say, is the one in question, will remain available for several months. Fazana, I mean, it wasn't good enough, was it?
I was on Instagram for research purposes, of course.
Of course.
And I was analysing the comments, my favourite thing to do, and it didn't land well. Not much of an apology, more of a ticking off, having a bit of a go at their customers, avoiding responsibility, centering the blame on their customers. Now, that may just about cut it for a mass market brand, but pity the PR team for Audemars Piguet. Not quite the luxury experience that AP usually curates for their customer. I thought about it with my PR hat on and I thought, right, what's going on here? Two principles of PR that they're leveraging to create this level of hype. One is scarcity, which is why brands launch limited editions as it engineers desire. Now, this product was not a limited edition, but they only had a fixed amount of product at select stores, and so it created that sense of scarcity.
Yeah.
The second principle, David, is social proof. Watching other people do something makes you want to do it as well, because you have an element of trust in the crowd, is a herd mentality. Some personalities are more open to suggestions of scarcity and social proof than others, which is why collectors often have a bit of a mindset. I'm not sure if it was entirely a stampede of collectors. There was a lot of people out there looking to flip to make money. Now, swatches drop this time. It followed the tried and tested method of teasing on social media, fanning rumors, creating a bit of a vacuum to allow others to speculate on the product, giving scant detail, just a sprinkling of breadcrumbs to keep them hooked. Now, they lean into limiting the product at limited outlets and wait for the queues to be streamed on social media and signal to the rest of us that there is something in Swatch that is worth queuing for. And then they wait a few weeks before they let the next batch drop.
Well, something's dropped here, and I think it might be Swatch's reputation. This is a right old humdinger of a fan hit, a right old mess. And I said a few minutes ago we were going to hear from the horse's mouth, and we are indeed. Here is the CEO of Swatch, interviewed very early on Tuesday morning of this week on the Today programme by Wake Up to Money's Sean Farrington, a very fine man he is indeed. The Swatch boss's name is Nick Hayek Jr. For the record, his sister, Nayla Hack, is the chair of Swatch, and his late father, also Nick, was the founder of Swatch. He rarely gives interviews. He was speaking from Switzerland, and here he is.
The people are passionate, and that's what is happening. We see something, a phenomenon that's based on a fantastic product. This should be a positive message, and having crowds at the beginning of the launch of a product should not be a bad news. It should be something that is good news.
Do you know what, Fazana? Until I heard this interview, which I think was extraordinary, I was definitely in the all publicity is good publicity camp here. Mm-hmm. I thought, basically, yes, there's mini riots going on all over the world, but these things are selling like hotcakes, and you know what? It's great. But this may be an example, and we've all had examples of this, haven't we, where it would have been better to say nothing, right? Unfortunately, Mr. Hayek, Nick Hayek, chooses to go on the Today programme. I personally do not think he was properly prepared. He doesn't just let one cat out of the bag. He lets a feline colony of cats out of the bag. Let's discuss them one moggy at a time.
So he says, passionate for the people. We say, tear gas. He says enthusiasm. We say pepper spray. David, he talks about passion, but how many of the people were there because they actually loved the brands? How many were there just to flip and make money in this affordability crisis? I saw the scenes and, oh, it just looked more like Hunger Games than it looked like a brand experience.
Yeah, I mean, I think he makes some very basic PR errors. I don't think he was properly prepared. It's clear to me that he didn't have his, what we call, lines to take in front of him. He didn't have his bullet points, because the interview goes on far too long. For starters, his PR people, if there were any PR people, I do wonder, should have said, you've got him for 3 minutes or 4 minutes. It goes on and on and on, and Sean Farrington gets him once, twice. He keeps on getting him. It's a brilliant interview. But much more importantly, he doesn't seem to care really about what happened outside the stores. But there's more, folks. Let's have another clip.
I say, only in a situation like this one, which is extraordinary, the whole planet was moving for this, there can be that there are certain situations that are tense. And everybody did the best But sometimes you cannot control everything.
He doesn't seem to take responsibility and accountability of what happens in terms of the distribution. And the public have shifted. I think the issue is that there's a gap, David.
Yeah.
And the gap is that the boss does not hold his company responsible for the chaotic scenes that occurred, and the public do. And it's that gap which is really fueling the PR reputational hit.
He displays an ignorance, unfortunately, I would argue, of why people were in that queue. They were in that queue, in their minds, they had already spent the £3,000 they were going to make by selling the pocket watch, which they were going to buy. So when they close the store, which is what they did in many cities in this country, mm-hmm. he's not just ruining their day, he's ruining 3 months of their lives. Mm-hmm. And he should have understood that better, because that is really potentially reputationally damaging for his business for many years to come. And that's essentially what I think the mistake is made. The riots or near riots, they'll come, they'll go, and it'll, you know, people will forget. The customers are never going to forget the way that they were treated by this business. And I'm not sure that he has dealt with that properly. I mean, one of the moggies he lets out of the bag is a very big, fat moggy, and it's this. He actually says to Sean Farrington, that some of the people in the lines, he says, were not well educated. Really not good. Really not good.
So, David, Swatch is the main character here, but let's look at Audemars Piguet, because it is a collaboration between both of these iconic Swiss brands, and AP has a huge following. Mm. Funnily enough, 3.7 million followers on Instagram. That's 1.2 million followers more than Swatch, which is surprising because Swatch is a mass market brand and AP is not. Now, AP is, of course, part of the holy trinity of watchmakers alongside Patek Philippe and Vacheron Constantin. Now, watchmaking is about craft, technical expertise, precision. That chaotic rollout of the Royal Pop, it goes against everything that the brand AP stands for. Now, the collaboration may have been plastic fantastic for Swatch, but I'm not sure it serves the AP brand well. It should have been an iconic moment of two Swiss makers making a pocket watch that has enthused millennials more than the Victorians. And I read this really interesting piece in Wired. They contacted AP about this whole fiasco, and they sort of flatly responded, Swatch's best place to comment on the operational handling of the launch. And I think that distancing language tells you everything, really.
You know, there's a lot of good PR going on here. I mean, to create this global energy and to create all these cues is, and it all comes from ideas, of course, and as we've said many times on this show, PR is about ideas, and if you can come up with ideas that create demand, then you make a lot of money. And they have made a lot of money, and they have done that, so we should say that. But you make a very good point, Fasana, about AP's brief comment. I can't help feeling they're out of their depth here. And of course, you know, to buy an AP watch, you have to wait a long time. You have to go on waiting lists. Their customers are very high-end, and they will not like this publicity. I think the fan hits are actually, for them, maybe more significant and longer-term than it is for Swatch. But of course, time will tell.
David, it just feels a bit retro, a bit outdated, out of step with today. Even back in the day, Apple, they had huge queues. Do you remember they did this performative, you know, pictures all over the newspapers, customers waiting outside Apple stores? But they were smart. They realized that brand experience includes the distribution channel and point of sale. They moved to reserve online, arrive at your slot, and it's a smoother experience. And also, apart from the customer, what about the staff working in these Swatch stores? They must have been terrified. The whole fiasco just reeks of a lack of thinking. So coming back to Swatch, I think their boardroom really need a win here. They really need to turn this mayhem into a financial miracle, because they have suffered weak profits in recent years. Mm. And with the luxury market in the doldrums, they need this collab.
They sure do. They need it to work, but they've got to remember, if I could venture to suggest, that, as I said earlier, the people in the queue are your customers. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to create queues, like, you know, Oasis did 2 years ago with Ticketmaster, and they were adjudged to have failed their fans, their customers, and they had to do a pretty good PR job at putting that right. If you're going to create queues, you've got to PR that properly. And they have not done that. They have appeared, I venture to suggest again, to look down their nose at their customers, and they blame lots of other people. And that is a fan hitter, and I think they will pay a price for that. How big? Well, as I've already said, time will tell.
Well, that's it from both of us this week. But if you want to hear more, you'll find an extended version of this episode on BBC Sounds, where we'll take you on the path less travelled, because it belongs to Pippa Middleton, and she doesn't want you anywhere near it.
Plus, tall tales. Why President Trump's PR on his visit to Beijing was being measured in feet and inches.
Make sure you're subscribed to us on BBC Sounds with push notifications turned on so you get to know as soon as our new episodes drop. Thanks as always for listening. Until the next time, bye.
Bye-bye.
When It Hits the Fan was produced by Duncan Middleton. The editor was Sarah Teasdale. It was a Raconteur Studios production. This is BBC Radio 4, now a programme recorded yesterday. It's The Media Show with Katie Russell and Ros Atkins.
Hello and welcome. This week we're joined by Richard Madeley on reporting on the Cecot mega jail in El Salvador.
And the BBC's Noor Nanji on her investigation into Channel 4's Married at First Sight. Is this a reckoning for reality TV?
But we are going to start with the new BBC Director General, Matt Britton. He's arrived after nearly 20 years at Google, where his final job there was as President of Europe, the Middle East and Africa.
And now, after what he's called a mini gap year, he is just 3 days into leading the BBC. So, Matt, we're delighted that you are with us so soon. I wanted to ask first, your media diet. How do you start the day? What do you consume as a...
Well, I mean, I've always been a loyalist, actually. So I've gone through all the numbers on the radio stations and I've alighted on mostly 4. A bit of 6, Nick Grimshaw in the morning is quite good. And what I've discovered in my apprenticeship weeks is the Radio 3 breakfast show. And they have an item called Not the 9 O'Clock News, which at 9 a.m. they play the most calming classical music. It's a good antidote to heavy diet.
You might need that for the next few years at the BBC. You've come from 20 years, nearly 20 years at Google. And I wondered whether there's parts of the working culture there that you want to bring to the BBC. I don't know whether they had rules about how long meetings could be, for example.
I've come in and I'm focusing on listening and learning and then sort of trying to provide some clarity in leadership. And I suppose one of the things I bring from that world is a sense of the velocity of change. I mean...